Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Ashton Woodling. Joining me today is Alicia Paulson. Alicia currently serves as the BSA officer of Honor Bank. She's a graduate of Central Michigan University with 9 years of banking experience. That includes positions of teller, operations specialist, compliance, and now BSA. Alicia lives in northern Michigan. When she's not working, she's spending time outside with her husband and 3 kids. Alicia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Of course. So one of the traditions we have here at Banking Matters is to ask all of our guests to share their journey into banking. Rarely, I feel like, do we hear about children who dream of growing up to one day become bankers. So would you share your journey with us?
Yeah. So it's kind of a funny story when I reflect back on it, but banking was actually my first job in high school. So I started when I was 18 at our local bank in my small town that I grew up in. I transferred to my college town and continued throughout my college years, graduated Central, moved on to Chicago, and actually entered a whole different industry. Was in that for probably 8 years until I learned that it wasn't for me. So moved back to Michigan and found an opportunity back in banking. I think my comfort zone was there, just having the years of experience behind me. So I fell into an operations role and loved it. BSA was just a small component of that role. So I wanted more of that. So I was with a very large company, and with large companies, it's hard to work your way up. So I kind of started looking elsewhere for the opportunity that I ultimately wanted. And when I started with Honor Bank, believe it or not, I wasn't in the BSA world. I actually started as an assistant branch manager, and I had my eyes on this position from the time I started. So I feel like I maybe manifested this career for myself, but shortly after starting, probably 6 months after I started as the assistant branch manager, the BSA actually pursued a different opportunity. So the role opened up for me, and of course I jumped on it, and yeah, the rest is history. I've been with Honor Bank for just over 3 years, and then specifically BSA about 2.5.
That's amazing. I love that I like that term you use, manifested. You made it happen.
I did. Yeah. I love BSA. I love detective work. I love digging and undercovering like the little details that portray a big picture. So it's fun. Every day is something different. I love what I do, so it makes it enjoyable.
That's awesome. So BSA is actually my weakest area. I feel like in compliance, we have like lending people and BSA people, and they don't usually mix. I'm so interested to hear you talk about BSA. So you mentioned the detective work. So tell me about that. What does that look like?
Yeah. So, well, first and foremost, we do have obviously monitoring softwares that detects a lot of the activity for us, and that will kind of cue us in on something out of the ordinary. So our softwares will pick up trends of our customers' behavior. Anything that's out of the ordinary, it'll trigger what we call a case. And that's where I come in and review the case. Some of it's just, you know, they did a large withdrawal or whatever it may be, and it's not out of the ordinary, but it's not necessarily suspicious. But there are a lot of times where it is suspicious. So I'm trying to undercover more of what the intent of the customer is, what they're doing with this particular transaction, what the ultimate goal of the transaction is. We have 8 branches here at Honor Bank, so a lot of it entails reaching out to the branch itself where that account is housed at, and just getting more information from the branch to whether they know the information or they have to reach out to the customer and ask a little bit more details on it. But it's always sometimes a mystery, and sometimes it's like I'm solving a crime, just digging into the further details of what's going on with this customer's behavior. And again, some of it's suspicious and some of it very well could be just, again, a large transaction that's just not within their typical behavior, but we're withdrawing money for a house or whatever it may be. But the software helps me out a lot as far as picking up out of the ordinary transactions for the customer. And from there, it just, we call them mole holes. We just go down mole holes, rabbit holes, just digging for anything that'll give us more insight on why this case is suspicious.
So tell me a little bit about the system and how that works, like how it spits out the suspicious activity. Did you have to sort of feed in some rules at the beginning, or does it just know like magic?
Yeah, so we, as the manual process of it, we set the parameters for our fraud software. So we tell the system what we consider suspicious, what we want the system to pick up on, whether it's a trend or a dollar amount or any specific trend that we want the system to pick up on, we'll throw those credentials within the system. And then the system tracks the customer's behavior. Gosh, I want to say it's a 90-day tracking period where it'll track the customer's behavior. And then once that 90-day point hits, it has a good feel of what our customer is going to be doing with their transactions. So if anything outside of those set parameters that we have thrown into the system occur, it's going to trigger a flag. And like I said, not all of it is suspicious. Some of it very well could be, but that's where the human comes into the place and reviews that further. And we have a team here in the BSA world that review the items that are queued as suspicious. So, and we have multiple programs that we work with. Some are daily, some are monthly, some are live. So it's a tedious process depending on which software we're working with, but I have double screens and my software is always up and running. And I feel like we have the front line there too, to help detect too. So our tellers, our branch managers, they're first and foremost with some of these in-person suspicious transactions. So they cue me in on a lot too.
That's good. So how many like alerts do you have to review in a day?
Gosh, our system, our daily system probably brings in close to 300. And like I said, we do have a small team that reviews those. We rank them by risk. So for instance, we could have an alert that triggers that's, you know, maybe 10% on our risk score, meaning that that compared to one that has a 90% risk score, that one that has 90 is going to take priority. The 10 is probably something very minimal. So we do rank them so we can prioritize our risks. And yeah, so I would say anywhere is 300, depending on the day. Tuesdays always bring in more because it takes into account the weekend. So depending on the day will really depend on the transaction number of cases that we have. Holidays typically tend to be, well, depending on what holiday it is, I was going to say slower. Before holidays tend to pick up. Suspicious activity in general tends to pick up around holidays, believe it or not. So right now I've been extremely busy. So entering that holiday season. So it's been busy in the BSA world.
Interesting. So how big is your team that helps you review all of those alerts?
So there's myself, the BSA officer. We have a BSA specialist who focuses on CRB, so cannabis accounts. And then we also have a compliance support specialist. And then my supervisor is also in on it as well. So we have a small team of four.
Wow. So that's still, I'm like doing the math in my head here, right? So you're still looking at like 75 alerts a day. That's
yeah,
a lot.
And I wouldn't say we even necessarily split them evenly. And to be honest, the compliance support specialist takes on a lot of those. She'll cue me in on anything that needs more attention or more explanation or something that's just way out of the ordinary. She'll hand it over to me. So I have her eyes first and foremost, and I'll come into play if something's just way out of the ordinary.
So let's talk about these sort of in order of severity from least to highest, right? So what are some examples of things you see that just you can clear right away without any other, I don't know, diligence? What else do those look like?
Yeah. So for instance, our software will trigger an ATM withdrawal. This customer hasn't done an ATM withdrawal in 6 months. Well, we can prove that it's their card. They authorized the PIN. Not necessarily suspicious, but yeah, it's out of the ordinary because they haven't transacted that type of transaction in over 6 months. Something on the opposite end of the scale, I would say, would be check fraud. For instance, that check number is out of the customer sequence. Their check numbers all start with 1,000, and this one's 8,050, check number 8,050. So that'll trigger a case and a red flag. And those are the ones that are high priority, because typically when the check number is out of sequence, it is a red flag. And more times than not, it's a fraudulent check. So somebody's got a hold of their account number, they've created fake checks, and now they're writing checks to who knows, and they're clearing our accounts. So kind of gives you a good range of the difference between low versus high priority.
Yeah. So how do you handle those high ones? Like, what do you do with that?
Yeah. So recently we created a fraud standard operating procedures, just because when you get something of that nature, and I still do it to this day, you kind of panic. I mean, it's like an ultimate like hustle. We have to get something done. There's fraud on this account. So we've created a document for our frontline staff to refer back to in the instance of that panic. So they can literally just read, okay, is it account fraud? Is it online banking fraud? Is it check fraud? We've kind of narrowed it down. It's so hard to dissect because there are so many components when it comes to fraud, and there's no dictionary on what to do, but this is just guidelines as to what we need to do on our end. And most importantly, we typically restrict the account right away. If we sense any type of fraud, we restrict the account so no more transactions can occur. We can't take any more debits out of the account. That's our first priority, is just restricting the account. Now, if it's debit card fraud, we may just restrict the debit card. So depending on what it is, but yeah, there's definitely that moment of, oh my gosh, we have a true case of fraud. So there's the panic that circles around, whether, you know, depending on who's involved, but the SOP has come into place already, and it's just only been in place for, I think, like a month now, but we've already referred back to it. So fraud is always prevalent. So it's nice to have a document in place for our frontline staff to refer back to know what to do in those instances.
Yeah, I love that. I have an audit background, so hearing that you're referring to a procedure is like perfect. Absolutely. Here's what we do. And it's interesting. So you bring up, like, first step is basically stop the bleeding, right?
Yeah.
So restrict the account. So what would you do after that? So let's say it is check fraud and you have cut off the account. What actions do you have to take next?
Yep. So there's a lot that goes into it. We have documents that our customer can fill out advising that this was indeed fraud, so we can get them their money back. So they're in a sense, an affidavit. So they're signing that, no, this was not me, you know, and that holds us not liable, I should say, for us to be able to give them their money back, and knowing that it truly wasn't them that transacted that transaction. So that would probably be our next step if it was check fraud. And again, depending on what type of fraud it is, typically the account's restricted. We keep it at a restricted status, open a new one, and then get everything going in the new account. So it puts the customer at a disadvantage to have to go through that, to have to reopen a new account. We have certain components in place depending on the type of fraud. For instance, positive pay is a new feature that we offer, which is basically like a tracking of their checks, right? So none of the checks can clear without that account holder authorizing them. So it wouldn't clear their bank account unless they log into their portal and say, yes, I've authorized that check. So we have a few newer components in place to help combat fraud. It's, you know, the more technology increases and now we have AI, the more prevalent fraud is, the easier it is for fraud to occur. So it's like we're trying to stay ahead of time than get these fraud deterrents in place to help combat that.
Very interesting. So I feel like BSA folks always have like crazy stories, right? So do you have an example of maybe the wildest suspicious activity you've ever seen?
Gosh, there are so many, and it's crazy. I would say one of the craziest was probably, you know, and it's sad too, because unfortunately the elderly population is vulnerable, right? So they're considered our vulnerable customers. So we really look out for them. But unfortunately we had a case, and I'm telling the story because no loss occurred and it was actually a positive ending, but a customer came into our branch, an elderly customer, withdrew some cash, you know, and our frontline staff is very well trained. So they asked the right questions. He had very good answers. He was withdrawing it for buying a new car. I can't even remember his exact reasoning, but withdrew this cash. He went downtown. I'm in Traverse City. So he went downtown Traverse City and tried to deposit the funds into a cryptocurrency ATM. We have those scattered throughout the city. However, the stations that those are at, this one happened to be a gas station, the attendants there are trained as well to look out for the elderly vulnerable population. So they cued law enforcement in. Law enforcement came out, spoke to the gentleman before the transaction occurred, asked where he received this money. He said his bank account at Honor Bank. They reached out to me. So it was kind of like a triangle effect. But the good news is everybody played a key role in there as far as our team asking the questions, the attendant at the gas station stopping it, law enforcement asking where the money came from, it getting back to me. We were able to, law enforcement talked the gentleman out of putting it, the funds into the cryptocurrency ATM, and he in turn came back to Honor Bank and deposited the funds. So I don't think he'll be doing that again, but again, that vulnerable population, they don't know better, you know, and they, those fraudsters are good at creating a sense of urgency. So they in turn panic, and whatever the outcome or whatever the reasoning that they needed those funds were urgent for this customer. So he came into Honor Bank in a panic. And, but again, that one was a happy ending. So some of them aren't, unfortunately, but that's just the nature of fraud, unfortunately.
Sure. Yeah. So you've mentioned a couple times that your frontline staff are really well trained to ask the right questions. How did you make that happen? How did you make sure they knew what to look for and what to ask?
Yeah. So I'm really in tune with training the frontline. I mean, if I could have a million BSA officers out there, I would, but that's not reality. So the frontline is my best defense. So it's my job to train them to know what to look for. So we are required in our policy to train our frontline staff and enterprise-wide, really. So I train not just the frontline, but we train everybody in the institution what to look out for, just in case they ever run into that scenario. But we assign online courses through a platform that we have. I also send out emails every Friday in which I've labeled Fraud Friday. They come from the BSA world, my world, and it's just either tips or what I've been seeing trends of or policy updates. It could be anything, but it's always fraud related in some sort. So we do identity theft training twice a year. Anything that I find that would be helpful and beneficial to my team, I'm always sharing it. So we have a good team in place. We have a good system in place. Like I said, they're the first line of defense, and I trust all of them. I know that they are well trained, so I'm confident with the team that we do have.
That's good. I love the idea of the Fraud Fridays and keeping that top of mind for all of your staff, right? So it's not just something that lies in the background. Constant reminder.
Yep, that was something that I don't know where that thought came from, but I committed to that when I first took on this role, is just staying involved with my team as well. And I want to have a good relationship, and I want them to know they can come to me for anything. I can come to them for anything. So it's kind of that communication too, just weekly. Of course, I communicate with them much more than weekly, but just keeping me in the back of their mind, me keeping them in my mind. So it's a two-way street. And I think it just provides good insight every week to just be on the lookout for this. So it's like I said, fraud is just so prevalent right now. So it's important to stay ahead.
That's good. That's a great takeaway. I love that. Alicia, if you could share one piece of advice with our listeners, and it could be anything, it can be suspicious activity like we've talked about, ways to detect it, or anything else, what would you tell our listeners, bankers today?
I would say trust your gut. I say that to my frontline staff. I say it to everybody. If something just doesn't feel right, even if you can't pinpoint it, there's a reason you feel that way. And 9 times out of 10, it will come back to prove itself just how you thought. So sometimes we may not always get the answers to what was off, but if we know something just doesn't feel right, just trust that intuition. It's there for a reason.
I love it. That's great. Like, it doesn't smell right. Sniff test.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I love it. Well, thank you for visiting with me today. I really enjoyed talking about the different ways you look for suspicious activity.
Thank you for having me.
And for the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.